verse 10. And these are the words, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." One of the biggest words in the English language is a little two-letter word spelled I-F. That little word, if. And you and I can drive ourselves crazy second-guessing things that have happened in our lives or decisions that we may have made even years ago. What if we had made a different decision? Or what if this hadn't happened? Or what if that hadn't happened? Now, this is a game that Satan's brood plays. But a child of God doesn't have to play it. We can pray to God, "Thy will be done," and that settles it in every single situation. And you and I can have the confidence that no matter how things have played themselves out, no matter how bad the situation seems to be, if we're a child of God and He's our Father, it's working for our very best, always. Now, it's not always easy to see this, so what we're going to do this morning is go through the Bible, and very briefly, because we're going to have to go fast to cover this, we're going to look at different things that happened to God's people in the Bible, things that at first seemed to be the worst things that possibly could happen. And then we're going to look at what came from that, and what wouldn't have happened if God hadn't allowed this thing to happen. We're going to start real quickly in 2 Kings chapter 5. And I'd like you to try to relate to these things as much as we can. These things that are happening to God's children. Now, Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master, and honorable because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. Now, here is a man called Naaman, who is a captain of the host of Syria, and he very suddenly got a disease that was incurable. In fact, it wasn't even a disease, it was an uncleanness, even worse than AIDS is in our day. He got leprosy, but we're not talking about him. He was a heathen man. He lived over in Syria. What we want to talk about right now is this little girl. A little girl that was suddenly taken captive, perhaps one day, went out in her yard to play, never dreaming that she'd never see her parents again. Because while she was out in her yard, all of a sudden, a band of Syrian horses came thundering out of the woods, totally unexpectedly. And they came racing into the little village, grabbed her and took her away. And I don't know if they killed her parents or not. Maybe they did. But if they did, can you imagine the heartache that these parents had? Can you imagine what thoughts they had that night as they looked at their little daughter's bed and it was empty? And they wondered, where is she? What's going to happen to her living in a foreign land with heathen people? Are they going to mistreat her? She's living in a land where false gods are worshipped. Is she going to lose her faith and go to hell? And all these questions that would revolve around their mind. These were good, strong, believing people. We know that because of the way the little girl reacted. Now, they believed that God was in control of everything, and in their own way probably prayed, "Father, thy will be done." Now, what if this hadn't happened? And what if God hadn't had that little girl be taken captive hundreds of miles away in a foreign country? Well, a whole lot of things wouldn't happen then, because she was there in the house when Naaman got leprosy. And you see, Naaman was one of God's chosen people, but he was lost. Nobody had ever told him about the true God. He didn't have a Bible that he could read. He was living in a heathen land, had been raised by heathen parents, was worshiping heathen gods. And he got this leprosy, and the little girl saw that, and she said, you know, if only my master was with the prophet in Samaria, he could cure his leprosy. And somebody told the king, and that set off a reaction, just like if there's a big row of dominoes, and you knock over the first one, and pretty soon they all go down. And that's what happened here. And it ended up that Naaman went into the Holy Land. He not only had his leprosy cured, but he found faith in God. He went back to Syria. He started worshiping the true God. And who only knows how many people were saved because God had that little girl taken captive. You see, sometimes things seem so bad right at the beginning, but after some time passes, you see that really good things come of these so-called tragedies that blow up in your face. And the little girl was blessed too. Now let's go quickly to another place, Exodus chapter 1, verse 22. And Pharaoh commanded all of his people, saying, every son that is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. And then the next chapter begins this way. There went a man of the house of Levi and took to wife the daughter of Levi, and the woman conceived and bare a son. And when she saw that he was a goodly child, she hid him for 3 months. But you know what happened after that. She couldn't keep him in the house anymore. Evidently, the soldiers were coming and making checks of every house. Because if little boys were born to the Jewish people, they were supposed to be killed. They were supposed to be drowned in the Nile River. And can you imagine the heartache when this little boy was born to this couple? You know, we're going to lose him. But his mother didn't go down and drown him. She hid him for 3 months, and then she made a little ark. And undoubtedly, she prayed to God about this. And she went down, she put him in that ark, and she put the ark afloat on the Nile River. And then she told Miriam, the little boy's sister, to watch. And of all the terrible things that happened, down came Pharaoh's daughter, the daughter of the very man that said this little boy should be drowned. And she found the ark, and she looked in it, and she saw that little baby, and she took him and raised him in her own house. And he had to go to Egyptian schools. He had to learn about Egyptian gods, and all the philosophy of Egypt was poured into his head. But there was one thing that happened before that. Pharaoh's daughter gave the child back to his mother, Moses' mother, to nurse him. And while she was feeding his body, she also fed his mind and his soul, probably for the first 3 years of his life. And she taught him about the true God. And then later on, a tremendous miracle happened. We read about it way back in the book of Hebrews, chapter 11, beginning at verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. All the heathen training that he had couldn't destroy his faith. And when he was 40 years old, he deliberately turned his back on all the wealth of Egypt, and he could have had all the money that he wanted. He could have had all the power that he wanted. And instead he said, I want to be a child of God. And I want to identify with God's people who are suffering. And the king got so angry that he wanted to kill Moses, and Moses had to flee from Egypt. And for the next 40 years, he was out on the desert, wandering around with a little flock of sheep. Now this seemed like a terrible, terrible thing. What a wasted life! But then one day, when he was way on the backside of the desert, he looked up and he saw something that was very strange, and nobody had ever seen it before. It was a bush that was burning. And even though the bush burned, it never was destroyed. And he went up to see what that was all about, and God spoke to him. And you know what happened after that. God sent him down to Egypt, freed his people, and took him into the Promised Land. Now that never would have happened if this tragedy hadn't have happened with the birth of Moses and finally having to flee from Egypt. And at first, what seemed to be such a terrible thing turned out to be a good thing. Now we're going to look at a little teenage boy. Well, he's not little. 17 years old. We're down in the Holy Land in Genesis chapter 37. verse 28, versus this. Then there passed by Midianites, merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. The story of Joseph is one of the saddest stories in the whole Bible, the way it starts out. Joseph was his father's favorite child. His father played favorites, and he really shouldn't have. That's not Christian. You shouldn't love one child more than another, but Joseph was loved more than his other brothers, and that wasn't right. But his father made him a beautiful coat of many colors. Joseph really liked that coat. But his brothers hated him. And one day they were out there herding sheep, and Joseph went out to see how they were doing, and they saw him coming way, way far across the field. And they said, "Here he comes, let's kill him." Well, he got to them, and they grabbed him, and the first thing they did was take his coat off, and they threw him down into a pit. And then they decided that rather than kill him, they'd try and make some money on the deal. And they saw a bunch of Midianites coming. These were people that were probably traveling by camel. They were traders. And they were going all the way down into the land of Egypt to trade. So they took Joseph out of the pit and they sold him for a slave. So take him down to Egypt and get rid of him. Then they took his coat, killed an animal, and dipped the coat in blood. They took it back to their father and said, "Do you know whose coat this is?" And he looked and said, "Oh, that's Joseph's coat. Some wild animal must have killed him and now he's dead." And they never told their father about it. Now, can you imagine what a traumatic thing that was for Joseph? When he said goodbye to his father that day and never saw him again for, it's turned out to be 20 years. Can you think of what a terrible thing it was to have his own brothers throw him into a pit and sell him as a slave? Now, that looked like the worst thing that could possibly happen. But God was in control of that, and you know what happened to Joseph. God blessed Joseph down in Egypt, and he became number one man in Egypt next to Pharaoh himself. And he interpreted Pharaoh's dreams, and he formed a plan where they could save a bunch of food so that when a big famine came, they'd have enough. And he was given a name that was called the Savior of the whole world. That's what his Egyptian name meant. And it's a beautiful picture of what Jesus Christ has done in saving us. And so once again, we see how a story that seemed to have such a terrible beginning and seemed to be the worst thing that could happen, God turned it into one of the greatest blessings in all the world. Now, there's so many other things. We can't cover all of this in detail, but in the book of 1 Samuel, I'm just going to read a few verses of one of the scariest scenes that you're going to find in the whole Bible. "There went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a helmet of brass on his head. He was armed with a coat of mail. The weight of the coat of mail was 5,000 shekels of brass. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs and a target of brass between his shoulders. The staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron." This guy, we would call him the heavyweight champion of the world. He was a giant. Everybody was afraid of him. I don't know how many hundreds of people he had killed. Nobody wanted to fight him. And he was a heathen, and he came out against God's army. And he said, "Send somebody down to fight with me. I dare you. And if I kill him, then you'll be our slaves. If he kills me, we'll be your slaves." 40 days in a row he went out there and mocked the army of Israel. Everybody was afraid of him. What a terrible, terrible thing that was. But then one day a little shepherd boy came along. He was probably a teenager too. I'm not sure how old he was, but he was too young to fight. He was back watching his father's flock, and his father sent him into the front lines with some supplies for his brothers. He had 3 brothers that were in the army. They were all afraid of Goliath too. And the shepherd's boy name was David, and he was there when Goliath came out and issued the challenge. And David said, "I'm not afraid of this guy. I was out watching the sheep once, and a big bear came along and tried to take one of my sheep, and I killed him. Another time a lion came trying to take a sheep, and I killed him. And God allowed me to do that. God gave me the victory over the bear and the lion. And this guy's no different than them. God will give you the victory over that giant too. And the king of the army laughed at him, said, you can't go out there, you're just a boy. You haven't got a chance against him. David said, God will give me the victory. So Saul said, okay, here, take my sword and take my spear and take my armor. David said, I can't fight with these things. I'll fight with what I usually fight with, and that was a stone and a slingshot. And he went down to the brook and he chose five smooth stones out of the brook. All he needed was one. And he came against that giant. He threw that thing, the stone, he hit the giant head, and down he went. Just in a matter of a second. That scary, scary situation turned out to be one of the greatest victories that anybody's ever won. It's one of the favorite stories of children in all the Bible. If there's one thing I could go back and see in the whole Bible, I'd want to see this. In all the Old Testament, this is what I'd want to see. The greatest fight in the history of the world until Jesus came. Again, something that seems so bad. Now there's another thing, the book of Ruth. It came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. This was a terrible thing. There wasn't even enough to eat. And there was a man who had a wife and two sons, and he just couldn't find anything to eat anymore in the Holy Land, so he decided he'd have to go where there was some food. There was some food in the land of Moab, which was a heathen land, so he decided to take his family there. So they moved into the land of Moab, and then all of a sudden something really bad happened. The man died. And he had two sons, and they each married a Moabite woman, and then the two sons died. And so now you had the mother and the wife. She's standing there. Her husband is dead. Her two sons are dead. She doesn't have anything anymore. What a terrible, terrible thing to have. Why did God send the famine into the land so that a family of his had to move into another land? And why did God have death strike like that? It seemed like such a terrible thing. So Naomi decided to go back home because she heard that the famine had been broken. And she thought she'd be going back alone, but she didn't. Because one of her daughters-in-law, whose name was Ruth, said, I'm going to go with you. And Ruth spoke some words that people still have for their wedding sermons today. You're talking hundreds and thousands of years after this. She said, whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God. Where thou diest, there will I die, and there will I be buried. And the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts me and thee. Isn't that beautiful? And so Ruth went back to the land of Israel where nobody liked her. She was an enemy of God's people, and she couldn't even be allowed to be a member of the society. She had to go out and glean in the field. And she said to her mother-in-law, let me go and glean after glean ears of corn. And so her mother-in-law said, okay, we don't have anything to eat. We've got to have something. So Ruth went out into the field. There she is, all alone, a stranger, not knowing anybody. And she's out there gleaning in the field, so poor that she can't even buy a loaf of bread. Isn't that terrible? But God worked something out of that, because it just happened by God's grace here that she started gleaning in the field of Boaz. And Boaz was a very rich person and a wonderful, wonderful person. And he looked out and he saw her and he fell in love with Ruth. And she fell in love with him, and pretty soon they got married and they had a little baby. And a few generations down the line, the great King David was born in Bethlehem where Ruth lived. And then after David, from David's seed came Jesus Christ. Now, you know, whoever would have guessed that all this was going to happen when that famine came to the Holy Land? And whoever would have guessed that when Ruth was out gleaning in the field, she was going to be a great-grandmother, I believe it was, to David. And actually, her name appears in the first page of the New Testament, the book of Matthew. She's in the bloodline of Jesus. You see how God works things. From something that seemed to be the worst thing that could possibly happen, and it turned out to be one of the best things. Now, we haven't got much time left. You know the story of the Red Sea. I guess I can't go into that. and how the children of Israel were camped by that Red Sea. And it seemed, again, like the worst thing that possibly could happen did, because Pharaoh said, I'm going to kill these people. And he took his great big powerful army. He had 600 chariots and a whole mess of soldiers, and he followed out there with the people, and he trapped them right by the shores of the Red Sea. That seemed to be the worst thing that could possibly happen. But it wasn't, because God parted the sea. And the children of Israel walked through, and then when Pharaoh tried it, the water came together and destroyed the whole army. And that, again, is one of the favorite stories that the children have in the whole Bible. And God saved his people. All these things, you see, that seem so bad at first, if you wait a little bit, all of a sudden you find out that God turns them into a tremendous blessing. Now, we're going to have one more example of this. One time when the disciples were very, very sad because Jesus told them something that they didn't want to hear. It's in Matthew chapter 16. And from that time forth, Jesus began to show his disciples how he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised again the third day. And Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be to thee. You see, when Jesus was going to Jerusalem, the disciples thought that he was going to go down there and raise a big army and chase the Romans out and set up a kingdom. And Jesus said, No, I'm not going down there to do that. I'm going down there to die. And I'm going to be handed over to the enemy and they're going to kill me. Peter said, Oh, that had to happen. That's the worst thing that could happen. That's not going to happen, Lord. You don't have to do that. But he did it. And in Matthew chapter 19, John chapter 19, listen to this verse. I'm in verse 25. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother. What do you think she was thinking? His mother. The one that brought him into the world, fed him, and taught him, and raised him, loved him. And now she sees her son hanging on a cross. And the people are mocking him and laughing at him. And the soldiers are sitting down there throwing dice and gambling for his clothes and ripping him into pieces. When it seemed like the worst thing that could ever happen. But 3 days later, he rose from the dead. And then after that, he ascended into heaven, and right now he's preparing the new heavens and the new earth, and he's going to have a kingdom that's going to last forever and ever and ever, and you and I are going to be there. And the blood that he shed on the cross when he died is the blood that God uses to cover your sins. So once again, God took the worst possible thing that could happen, and he turned it into a tremendous blessing. Now, when Jesus tells us to pray, Thy will be done, sometimes this is the hardest thing to pray. Because sometimes the will of God goes completely contrary to the way we want it to be done. And God tells us this is going to happen. He says in Isaiah 55, My thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. Now, sometimes when we have to carry crosses, it's not very easy to do, but there's always a blessing in it. You know, there's a story that's told on. This is not a true story, because it really didn't happen that way, but it kind of illustrates a point. A man told a story one time about that when God created birds, originally, he didn't give them any wings. Now, that's not true, because God did give them wings. But this man, he made up the story this way to show something. He said, God didn't create birds with any wings, but one day he came to them, and he had some wings, and he put them in front of the birds, and he said, I want you to carry these. And so the birds took the wings in their beak, and they started carrying them around. They were very, very heavy. And they found out it was really hard to carry them in their beak, so they threw them up, and the wings landed on their back, and they started carrying them around on their back. And then one day, all of a sudden, the wings grew right into the backs of the birds, and all of a sudden, they started to fly. And they found out that something that at first had been a real burden to them, God finally turned into a blessing, And it enabled them to do things they never could do before and go places they never could go before. Now, that story's not really true, but it does illustrate something. Some of the burdens that God puts on your back that it seems like are so heavy to carry, you just wait. Because God is going to turn them into a blessing. And you're going to be able to go places you never could go before and do things that you never could do before. That's a promise. Now, we'll have a prayer. Continue our study this morning of the prayer that Jesus gave.